So we are up to Bir Agro, Perkes Posuk Yud Beis. Ni Chochma, Shachanti Oma, V'das Mezimois Emtza. So we spoke about Shachanti Oma in the context of Chazal, Shenichnas Boy Armumius. The Vilna Gaon, let's just look at a few more psukim. Yiras Hashem Sinois Ra, Geya V'Gaon V'derach Ra, Ufisa Puchois Sanesi. So this is a very interesting thing. The physical structure of this pasuk is very interesting. Why? Because you'll notice that even though the last word in the pasuk is Guf Rishain, Sanesi, I hate it, because who's talking now? The Torah itself, right? Nevertheless, the first part of the pasuk, right, is Yiras Hashem Snois Ra. So it's a comment that could stand on its own 2 feet, and it isn't necessarily spoken by her directly. So the way I would read it is as follows. Since Yiras Hashem Snois Ra, that a chelik of Yiras Shamayim is to hate evil, therefore Geya v'goin v'derech ro fi tapuchoi sanesi. I, the Torah, underwrite this. I confirm this. That a chelik of Yiras Shamayim is to hate all the negatives. You know, this is a very interesting concept that courses throughout Yiddishkeit and is a source of a lot of vexation as well. Because everybody wants everybody to be nice. To be nice. This is the ecumenical thing, to embrace everyone, to see the good in everyone, and to find some common ground where we can somehow manage together to achieve a better world. And these words sound very, very good. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. After all, you believe in one thing and I believe in something else. And if that's the foundation of who we are, and that's where we're going to set down our flag and position ourselves, then we'll never see eye to eye about anything. And within Yiddishkeit, you have the same phenomenon. You have this desire on the part of many to kind of slough over the differences between us by claiming that the world out there is anti-Semitic, the world out there is always against us, and the tyrant, the Reitzeach, makes no distinction what kind of a Jew you are. It doesn't matter whether you're frum or fry, whether you're conservative or reform or whatever. It makes absolutely no difference to them. And therefore, we should, in the same context, in the same vein, bond together because we are all of us, B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, B'Yaakov. And that sounds also very right, L'cha Oira. And then, of course, there's another aspect to it, another corollary, that you can never be makariv somebody, and you can never show somebody the beauty of Torah, unless you go with the mahalach of Drachei Darchei Noam, v'chol nesivo seho shalom. Again and again, if you go with the strength and the force and the aggressiveness of Yikov Hadin Sahar, then there's no way that you could ever reach out to anybody, because after all, they are all tinoiko shenishbu, and therefore, there's no possibility of bringing them back unless it's ba'avoyseis ha'ahava. So in contradistinction to this, a personality like Pinchas is somebody that is not fully appreciated. Because Pinchas and Eliyahu and Har HaKarmel, and in fact from the Torah, you get the impression that Pinchas is a very positive thing. Because he entered into the breach, and he is the kanoim poigim boy of the Habayal Aramis. That the Chazal say kanoim poigim boy. The kanoi is dafka, the one who is entering into the breach to solve the problem and to kill this Boyal Aramis. Now the question is, so which mahalach is right? So the answer is extremely subtle. extremely complex. And unless a person appreciates that subtlety, he has to go wrong, either in one direction or the other. The balancing act of Yiddishkeit in these inyonim is so complicated that it requires a tremendous darga. Personally, it requires a darga of an Adam Gadol Miyod, to be able to parse through all of this and to separate its nuances. But just to give a general sense, you take a look at Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel and you see a remarkable thing. Eliyahu created a matzav which we call Hayra'as Shah. Now, you do not do a Hayra'as Shah on your own. It's not like you get up one day in the morning and you say, you know what, I'm going to decide to be Makriv and Abama, even though the Beis HaMikdash is already fully established. You can't do that. So it was, in other words, benevua. This Hayra'as Shah was a Hayra'as Shah of a Navi. And even though Eina Navi Rashoi L'Chadesh, that's permanently. But for the moment, the Navi can have a divine inspiration to do something that inherently is against the commandment of the Torah in all other circumstances. What I'm driving at is that when Eliyahu HaNavi came to Har HaKarmel, he came Alpi Tzivui Hashem. Furthermore, Eliyahu HaNavi performs what is obviously a miracle, because he commands that they should drench the Mizbeach with water again and again and again, three times. And then he achieves that Eish is Yoyred Min HaShamayim and devours not only the water, not only the carb, but actually the Mizbeach itself. Now obviously the people who saw this were so overwhelmed by this that immediately they screamed out, Hashem Elikim, Hashem Elikim. And this is the source of what we say. We say it even Yom Kippur Katan, but we say it on Yom Kippur Matzah Yom Kippur. That's the last thing we say, Hashem Elikim. Now, what happened afterwards? So the kanos of Eliyahu at that moment is to kill out all of the Nevi'ei Haba. And it was eminently successful. The people rallied around him, they stampeded the place, and they killed the Nevi'ei Haba. So we would have expected, and I believe, that Eliyahu, in his intense commitment, in his kanos for Hashem, also expected. I mean, I wasn't there, and I don't know Bavadai, but I suspect that he expected it too. What did he expect? What should we have expected? That when this episode occurred, and the Eish is Yored Mashamayim, and they're screaming Hashem Aleikim, that the very next thing that they're going to do is to attack the palace of the wicked queen Izebel, and kill her, and turn the palace upside down, and bring all the rest of Bnei Yisrael l'tshuva. What happens instead? Instead, what happens is that a few minutes later, we see in the pasuk that Eliyahu is running for his life, and that actually Izebel gives out a fatwa. You know, she gives out a gzeira that he should be killed. Now, where are the people? What happened to storming the palace? And Eliyahu realizes that the sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Melech al kol ha'aretz and Hashem hu Elokim afanemes is lost upon the people who have immediately descended and reduced themselves to what they were originally, ke'ilu the entire Har HaKarmel episode never occurred. It's an astonishing thing. And the truth is, we wonder to ourselves, how is that possible? Except that we also realize that, you know, Chazal say, L'kachtem lechem b'yoyim ha-rishayin, rishayin l'chesh b'in avoynas. Sukkos is rishayin l'chesh b'in avoynas. What happened to the days between Yom Kippur and Sukkos? So the Mepharshim say, nah, between Yom Kippur and Sukkos, you're still okay. So they gave us 4 days that we're okay from the time that we scream Hashem Elokim. Maybe because I'm a Kohen, but I wouldn't give ourselves 4 minutes. Lamaisa, the person comes out on Yom Kippur, he feels cleansed, he feels good, he feels perfect, and then he goes on with his life. The galaf on Yom Kippur is doimah to after Pesach. the lines by the pizza shops. Imagine 8 days without pizza. It's 8 days without pizza. But today they're fixing that. They're making a pizza that's kosher l'Pesach also. So you don't have to worry. It's not something that we have to, you know, we have other things to worry about, you know, about Iran and other things. But the pizza Matzah Pesach, we don't have to worry about anymore. But Matzah Yom Kippur, it's the same thing exactly. Too much Kedusha. 25 hours of Kedusha is something that the average person just can't handle. And believe it or not, if there would be a World Series game, Matzah Yom Kippur, believe me that they would go straight from the shul to the World Series game on the television. There's no question about it. So what's the pshat? But the same person screamed with his heart and ganzen gefühl, and it was for real, by the way. That's the point. The Teretz is, as I always tell you, because the human being is totally absurd. And we are one day a malach, and the next minute, even next the next day, the next minute, we could be very much a human being, and even less than that. There's a maisa that they say from in the name of the Rebbe Rebunim. There's a maisa about him that someone came over to him and he said, "I don't understand where I went wrong. Please explain it to me. Where did I go wrong? I fasted for 40 days and I did all the things that are necessary for Gilui Eliyahu." Here comes Eliyahu again, but this is Gilui Eliyahu. "I wanted Eliyahu to appear to me. And I looked in the Halakha Svarim and it gave me the plan, the protocol. What am I supposed to do to see Eliyahu Anovi? And I did exactly that. And at the end of the time, nothing happened. Ilamdeinu Rabbeinu, where did I go wrong?" So the Rebbe Rebunim didn't tell him where he went wrong. He started telling him a marshal, a story. He says the Baal Shem Tov was famous that he had a special pair of horses with a special driver. In many of the stories about the Baal Shem Tov, they talk about the horses and his driver. Anyhow, the kids of the horses were going to the Baal Shem Tov, which is very well known that the Baal Shem Tov had Kvitzas HaDerech, and he used to travel great distances, and he would travel in the special wagon with the special pair of horses. One of the horses starts talking to the other horse, and he says, "I'm hungry. I am very hungry." So the other horse was a bigger pikeach than this one, and he's always the one who's giving him the advice and giving him the explanations. So when he said he's hungry, the other horse answers him, "Listen, you know, we're not stam horses. We're the Baal Shem Tov's horses. So when we are passing one of these feeding stations, these feeding troughs for behemoths, we're not going to stop there, because we're not much higher madrega. We're in a madrega of people. So when we get to the tavern, to the inn, that's when we'll eat. No, you promised me the tavern, the inn. His stomach is still growling, but the first horse says, okay, lama gain vaita." So they continue, and they go right past the tavern. So he turns to him now, and he says, "My high, what is going on now? You promised me by the tavern, I'm starving." He says, "You know something? I didn't really myself chap the emes. As smart as I am, I didn't chap the ultimate emes. We are the Baal Shem Tov's horses, means we're more than people. We're like malochim. And malochim don't have to eat." That's what he told him. Anyhow, finally, the Rebbe Rebunim finishes his story. Finally, they come to their destination, and the driver unhitches the horses from the wagon and brings them over to the bag of oats, and they eat the oats very much like horses. Like a bunch of fair. So now, the Baal Shem Tov's horses, he says to him, "You could fast for 40 days in your pursuit for Gilui Eliyahu. But what was after the 40 days? Bist du geblieben demselben fair, bist du bist gewend früher." So he says, "How do you expect to have Gilui Eliyahu? You haven't changed inside of you a kihuzeh. These formulas that you have, but you didn't change. You're the same person that you were, and you will never see Eliyahu HaNavi unless you yourself become a Baal Madrega." That is the point that Eliyahu looked at these people the way we look sometimes at people Matzah Yom Kippur, and he could not fathom what happened over here. That after such a Hayra Shah, and such a Gilui Shechina, and such a Neis Nigla, and such a shechita. I mean, lemaisa, they already did something. So it's much easier afterwards to follow Eliyahu. And Eliyahu remains completely alone. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu finds him, and he asks him, Malacha, what's doing with you, Eliyahu? So Eliyahu starts telling the Ribbono Shel Olam, Kanei Kinesi LaShem Elokei Tzvokos. I started doing my kanos for Hashem, and what happened? And the people, they broke your mizbechos, and they didn't follow you, and they worshipped the Baal. And vayivasa ani levadi vayivakshu es nafshi lekapta. I remained all alone, and they want to kill me. You know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did? HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes Eliyahu HaNavi and brings him south, 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 south. You know, Har HaKarmel, that's where Haifa is now. He brings them all the way down into the Sinai Desert. What's in the Sinai Desert? The original place, we don't even know where that is, Maimer HaSinai. He brings him down to Har Sinai, to Chorev. And he appears, there's a wind, there's a storm, there's a tempest. Lo barash Hashem, lo ba'esh Hashem, lo baruach Hashem, kol dmama daka. After this apparition, where he puts Eliyahu in the cleft of the mountain, and he shows him this grand pageantry scene, and then he says to him, Nu nochamol, exactly the same thing. What do you say now, Eliyahu? And Eliyahu does not change his pismin one iota. And word for word, he repeats the whole thing. I was mekane for you, Hashem, and the people are terrible, and they worship Avodah Zorah, v'yivasar ani levadi, v'yivakshu es nafshi lekachta. Mamish mila b'mila, the same thing. So what was going on over here? What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu bringing him to Har Sinai? So Sfarim write that they wanted, Hashem wanted Eliyahu to realize something, to see something b'chush. He brings him to Har Sinai and he says ke'ilu, without words, but he says to Eliyahu, do you recall that I gave the Torah here at Har Sinai? And do you recall that the Gilui Shechina that was at Har Sinai was 10,000 times more than whatever the people could have witnessed on Har HaKarmel when the fire came down? Because I myself came down? And do you recall that nevertheless, not long after, they made an egel? Yeah? And do you recall that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down, he broke the luchos? But then he turned back and went and pleaded with me for 40 days and 40 nights. And he pushed me and pressed me that I should forgive Bnei Yisrael. The same ones who refused to wait for him. The same ones who were over the Egel. Eilel Eichecha Yisrael. 5 minutes after I appeared to them, Bechvaydi V'atzmi, when they said, Daber Ato Imanu V'nishmah V'yadaber L'kim Imanu Penamus. And they were on the highest madrega. Moshe Rabbeinu says in Sefer Dvarim, "Heitivu Asher Dibeiru Hashem said, Mi Yitein V'Hoyel Levovim Zeimayim Kol Hayomim Liyira Es Hashem." So it was the highest level Yira Shemayim. And 5 minutes later, Echeit Ha'Egel, Vayarom Ki Boishish Moshe Laredes Minahor Kum Asay Lanu Elohim Asher Yelech Lufaneinu Ki Zeh Moshe Ish Lo Yadanu. We don't know where he is. So have patience, wait, like the women waited. Wait! So Moshe Rabbeinu, if he was like you, he would have come down and he would have ripped the place apart. He would have said, Ribbono Shel Olam, what kind of a people is this? And what did Moshe Rabbeinu say instead? V'heim amcha v'nachal osecha. He says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, when the Ribbono Shel Olam says to him by the Shviras Haluchos, go down, go back, your people have sinned. He says, my people? They're your people. What, since when do you call them my people? Ribbono Shel Olam, they're your people. So the same episode, 10 times over, in every direction, in terms of the Gilui Shechina, in terms of their consciousness of Hashem, in terms of their failure, and in terms of Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction. You, Eliyahu, how could you still say Kanei Kinesi? You know what happened? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Eliyahu HaNavi, go ahead and find me a second Navi, Elisha from Avil Mechayla. And you know where he finds Elisha? He finds him in those bucolic scenes, such an idyllic scene. He finds him in the farm, plowing the field of his parents. And you know what happens? It's an amazing thing. And this is, I couldn't find in Sfarim, but I think that you might be able to touch the pasuk this way. You know what happens? He takes his cloak and he throws it over Elisha. And at that moment, Elisha drops the harness, he drops the plow, and he goes with Elio. And he goes off into the sunset. His parents won't even know what happened to him. All of a sudden, Elisha realizes that he left his parents without even saying goodbye. And he says to Elio, please, let me take leave of my parents and my family, and then I will go with you. And then Elio says, Leich shuv ki me'er asisi loch. What did I do to you? And there are different mefarshim. But I was thinking that in the context of what we were talking about, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want Elisha bedafka? So it's a Gemara Maseches Baruch Hu says an amazing thing. If a person, I mean a Navi, a Rav, a Tzaddik, if a person does not want to take from the Hamon Am, he can do that. Just like who didn't take? Shmuel HaRamasi. The Pasuk says that Shmuel used to make a tour and help everybody, give them guidance, give them encouragement, tell them Divrei Nevuah and Divrei Torah and Psak Halacha. When he would travel, he traveled with a huge entourage of his own people. And he had his own cooks and he had his own everything. He had his own quartermaster. And he set up his own tent. And he had his own place and he didn't take from anybody anything. In fact, when they wanted a melech, you remember what Shmuel said to them. Why you're not happy with me? And he repeated the same as Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo chamor echad mehem nososi. I never took anything from you. Hinenu anu vi. Answer me, testify against me. Does anyone know if I ever took anything? He never took so much as a penny. Not a blade of grass, not a piece of corn, nothing. Then the Gemara says if a person wants to take, he can take like Elisha. Because by Elisha it says that he used to pass by Shunem, and first at the beginning he used to stop there to eat, and eventually, of course, she says to her husband, the Shunamis says to her husband, it's not right, he passes, he neish, kim over aleinu tamid. Let's make for him an aliyah's kid. Tana will make him a little attic above the house, and the nosim shamita, the shulchan, the kisa, menaira, and whenever he passes by Shunam, he'll stop and he'll rest there. And that's, of course, the whole story, that the baby was promised her, and then the boy died, and he was put in that attic, etc., etc. So what is the Gemara trying to say? So first of all, you have to have a justification for not taking. Now the Teretz is like this. Taking, we're not talking about putting your hand into the cash register. It means that the people were generous in their love for the Navi. They wanted to bind themselves to the Navi. And the way they did that was by offering, like the Gemara says in Maseches Menachos, that, you know, Matul Malai, Lekisa Shel Talmid Chacham, Kilu Hikrit Bikurim. It's a special thing. It brings you closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. They give the Navi a matana. And the Rambam himself, who says that you're not allowed to, you know, be misparnished from tzedakah, etc., he says, small matanas you can take. You know, that Gemara stays in its place. The Rambam can't budge that Gemara. You can take. So what's the pshat not to take is a justification. You need a justification. You need an example. Because when you don't take, you don't have the connection. You remain distant. You're aloof. You don't have the warmth and the bond that a meal, providing the Navi with a meal, there's that yearning to connect to Hashem's word, which if you can provide the Navi with a meal, he for a moment becomes a member of your family. And if he keeps his distance, and he has his own tent and his own food, there's a separation. In Elisha's instance, there was no separation. And Elisha, unlike Elio, has a very specific identity. We know where he comes from. We know that he has parents. We don't even know that Elio has parents. Doesn't say one word about Elio's background. Do you know that we don't know for sure which Shevet Eliyahu came from? Everybody says, of course, Pinchas Eliyahu, so obviously came from Shevet Levi. It isn't necessarily so. And there are conflicting Medrashim. He might have come from Shevet God or whatever. The problem with Eliyahu is that he is so removed that he cannot feel Moshe Rabbeinu's compassion for Klal Yisrael in spite of everything. So you'll ask a question, is this an indictment of Eliyahu HaNavi? So the answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs another Navi right now. But it's not an indictment of Eliyahu. Because Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel is the ultimate kanos, and that remains in its place b'mekoy maimunach forever and ever. You know, there are different medrashim and different mamari chazal about bris milah. And most understand that Eliyahu is asked to come to every single bris milah to find evidence of the commitment of Bnei Yisrael in spite of everything. And as the Gemara says in the beginning of Perek Reb Elezer, the milah, a mitzvah, milah, bris milah, is a mitzvah that kiblu aleihem besimcha. And you find that just about everybody does a bris milah, even if they're removed many, many steps from emissa avodas Hashem day and night. People who don't keep kashrus, people who don't keep Shabbos, nevertheless, by and large, will be mal their children. So bris milah is something that we show Eliyahu HaNavi, we sort of force him, as it were, to come to the bris milah and see, you see, the people still cleave to the Ribbono Shel Olam in their way and after their fashion, perhaps, and with all the warts and all of the chesronos. But afal pi kein, you cannot say all is lost. You cannot say that Yiddishkeit is a shambles. You cannot say that the people are no good. That's one tzad. There's another tzad that Eliyahu comes to corroborate, to corroborate and to encourage. But it's a matana that was given to Eliyahu, that he's zoicha to be at the bris milah. It's not to put it in his face, as it were. But adarabah, he's zoicha to be at every bris because he was such a kanoi. So this is what I wanted to share with you. When you have a personality like Eliyahu, you have the extreme, and Pinchas the same, you have the extreme madrega of what we call kanos, and it seems to be the exact opposite of an Elisha personality, who maybe is similar to Aaron HaKayin, Oyev Shalom and Raidev Shalom, and is seeking always to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim in that positive sort of way. So which is it? So the answer is, what is the definition of kanos? What is kanos? So first of all, kanos says, I do this only for Hashem. There's no agenda. That already wipes out, I would say, 95% of all kanos, because they're not for real. In other words, kanos demands the same thing that I think the Koshnitzer Maggid said in the Pasuk in Tehillim about David HaMelech. It says that David HaMelech says, Mesanecha Hashem Esna, those who are evil, I hate them too. And then right afterwards it says, Chakreni Kel V'dalavavi, examine my heart. So the Koshnitzer Maggid asks, what's the connection of the two psukim? So he says that a person who is a kanoi has to be 100% l'shem shamayim. No agendas. It means that be'etzem, what is David HaMelech called? Admoni v'yefei einayim. He has pretty eyes, he has beautiful eyes. His look upon people is positive. But he's admoni, he's a redhead. This is the kanoi who says that I stand up for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands for and what Yiddishkeit is, but never with a personal agenda against a single Jew. And very often, there are all kinds of agendas. Sometimes it's gaiva, sometimes it's to make yourself important, sometimes it's to knock somebody down that's in your way, sometimes it is simply, it's your Rebbe, or it's your person versus the other person, but it's not ultimately Hashem. It's me, it's politics. And once politics gets involved, How did the Rabbi Yeruchim the Mira Mashgiach say about Pinchas? The pasuk says, "Vayakom itaycha eda vayikach roimach biyodai." It says, "Vayikach roimach." He says, not like those people that walk around with a gun in their pocket looking for an opportunity. He wasn't walking around with the roimach in his pocket. When the time came, he went out of the eda. That's also a very telling expression. Vayakom mitocha eda. That takes care of most kanoim. But what is the definition exactly of kanos? The answer is, kanos says that if something is against Hashem, it is so intolerable that regardless of any cheshbonus of any kind, I have to fix it. And that's a very, very high madrega. It requires a very, very high level. Most people are kanoim because they're miserable people. They're miserable people. They're miserable in their own lives, and they're not nice. They're nasty. Maybe because of that, I'm not a psychologist. But people who are kind and gentle and good, that's the hinini naisin layas brisi shalom. But if you ask, is kanos a good thing or a bad thing? So your question is, what are you asking me? The kanos that you witness, or the kanos of an Eliyahu? If you ask me the kanos that you witness, since it's fraught with all kinds of negatives, it doesn't define itself properly as kanos. And then it's simply nasty, and then it's simply harmful, and then it's simply full of kas, and it does not resonate with kedusha whatsoever. And when it doesn't, it's a chilul Hashem. But the true kanos always comes with brisi shalom. That's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying. Hinini noisin lo yisbrisi shalom. And you know why? Because in the end you save Yiddishkeit over and over again. Without Pinchas, there would have been a terrible churban in Klal Yisrael. And churban in Klal Yisrael isn't always that they die from a magefa. Sometimes they can die from assimilation. And if there's a person that says, no, this is not going to be, and it's really l'shem shamayim, he may with like the finger in the dike, he may hold the waters back and prevent massive assimilation and massive destruction. This is the kanoi that's ideal and that's perfect. How do I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu corroborates an Eliyahu ultimately, even though he wanted to show him that he has to be now like Moshe Rabbeinu? He cannot keep saying kanoi kinesi, because in the pasuk that gives Shevet Levi their special privileges, in the brachas of Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of his life, in V'zois HaBracha, it says, "Ulevi Omar Tumecha V'urecha L'ish Chasidecha." And it says, "Ha'oimer La'aviv U'le'imai Lo'i Re'isiv, Ves Echav Lo'i Hikir, Ves Bonav Lo'i Yoda, Ki Shamru Imrasecha U'vrischa Yinsaru." The covenant with Hashem was such that they never, ever stopped from being mal their children. From the time of Avraham Avinu, from the day that Levi himself was born, the Rambam says also in the 13th Perek of Hilchos Yisurei Bia, the beginning of the Perek, Levi was always mal their children. In Mitzrayim, they were mal their children. What's the point? Brischa Yintzoru. They kept your covenant of Bris Milah. Why did they keep the covenant of Bismillah under all circumstances when everybody else failed? Because they didn't descend into Avodah Zarah either. The Rambam says at the end of the first parak of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, "May Olam Loi Avad Shevet Levi Avodah Zarah." Such a commitment to the Ribbono Shel Olam does not tolerate the unbelievable contradiction of Chet HaEgel, and therefore they do not recognize anything but the greater glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the need to compensate for that incredible Chilul Hashem with the Kiddush Hashem of wiping out the Ra. And at that moment, they lose completely any sense that the other person is there, because the whole Tachlis is Kvod Shamayim. When you have that kind of Kanoi and somebody's watching from a distance, what is going to be his conclusion about Shevet Levi? A bunch of Reitzchim. A bunch of vile and evil people who don't even recognize the bonds of family. But what is really the emes? The emes is that when your sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu becomes so profound, that is when you lose any other relationship and any other correlation. And that is a very hard thing for your average person to understand, because they don't understand that kind of closeness to Hashem. And since there are always troublemakers who are not real genuine Kanoim, acting like Kanoim for all kinds of hidden agendas or because of simply the failure of their personalities, then the outside observer gets very confused, because he sees the same thing happening and he sees it's not Beseder. So he makes a blanket judgment that this kind of approach to anything is wrong. So what is right? Peace and quiet, and everything is good, and everything is fine, and everything is able, and everybody has to do, as a Yiddish expression, no shash still, just keep calm. Keep calm and take it easy. So that's why this is a very big chiddush. Yiras Hashem Senois Ra. An element of Yiras Shamayim is to hate evil. You have to hate evil. It's not enough to be just plain positive all the time. Because when you have real connections and real emotions, the real emotions bring out a negative emotion where it belongs. And not to have that negative emotion is not a person that's on a higher madrega. It's a person that is disinterested. He doesn't care enough. You have a very interesting thing. A person has, Baruch Hashem, a wife. He and his wife are walking in the street, and somebody attacks his wife abusively with terrible words. And the person says, you know, the husband says, you know, lamegein vaita. Another person wants to kill the guy. So whether he does or he doesn't and how he approaches it, this is all a matter of making cheshbonis, and it's complicated. But who's right? Who's right? Not to mention, what does the wife feel? That the teretz is, if you don't stand up for the covet of the person that you love tremendously, and that is part of you, but not because of the selfishness, but that's part of you, and therefore is so important, then who are you, and what are you? Like, what kind of a person are you? So it's a simon, either one of two things, that you're a helpless wimp, or that you really don't care about her. That's the point. There's no such thing as not fighting back. There's no such thing as turning the other cheek. Turning the other cheek is a meaningless concept. It's totally meaningless. If it doesn't matter, then you don't have to turn your cheek, because there's nothing to do. You just go on. And if it matters, and it matters enough, you fight back. You show what's right in the face of what's wrong. You don't just sit back and say, okay, you know, I'll absorb it all. Because where is the Kroy Tramayim in that? So that is the Nakuda of Yiras Hashem Snois Ra. And then he says, Geya v'gon v'derech ra upita apuchos, gaiva, and the evil path, and words that come out of a mouth that are sheker, that are the opposite of the truth, sonesi, I despise. Zoktagra, on this Pasuk Yud Gimel, Yiras Hashem, Kloimar, the Savoy Lide Yiras Hashem, the Yiras Hashem Soine Ra, Geya Vagoin, Geya, what's the difference between Geya and Goin? They're the same thing exactly. It's Gaiva. So what's the difference between Geya and Goon? Goon here doesn't mean a genius.
How about the same word?
It's the same word. Geya and Goon is Kemat the same word. So what?
He says Gaon. Gaon means Gaiva, and Gaon means Gaon.
Oh, you mean why is Gaon called? Why is the genius called a Gaon? Right. Because he's a person that could be very proud of his achievements, or a person that's on a very high level. So they use the same word. But Machmas, so he writes like this: Geya v'Gaon, Geya hu mishem is Goya ba'atzmoi, ve'ein kol ha'olam nechshav kenegdoi. The goyin who shem is goyel machmas gavoso roitzer shu yishoir aleihem So what's the difference between Geya and Gaon?
The Baal Geya doesn't care about anybody else, and the Gaon has to, other people have to bow down to him.
So what? That's exactly what he just said. So you translated it very well. So now what's the difference, Lemaisa? There's two kinds of gaiva. Which gaiva is a bigger gaiva?
I don't know.
The first or the second? The first is a much bigger gaiva. The first, imagine the following. A person is a super genius, and the people around him have a maximum IQ of 80. Is that person going to be interested in their opinion of him? Will that person have any hanah in their catering to him and bowing down to him because he's so smart? No, because the distance is so enormous that it means nothing to him. I mean, they're like a bunch of pieces of wood. Now, what happens, however, if the distance is not that great and he has an IQ of 110 and they have an IQ of 100? Then Destin is a little sharper than them. But then their opinion means a lot to him. And he wants their adulation. He wants their respect. He wants their affection. The Geya, look at the Lashon HaGra, very interesting. The Geya Umishem is Goya Ba'atzmai Ve'ein Kol Ha'olam Nechshav Kenegdoi. The world doesn't matter. It doesn't count. It's Keklipas Hashum. I'm so big, what point is there even looking to you for some sort of, you know, hero worship? I don't need that, because I'm even beyond that. Masha'ein kein ga'on, husha mizgo'eh, u'machmas ga'avosa rotsa shehu yishorer aleihem. He wants yishorer, it's with a sin. He wants to be sar aleihem. V'derech ra u'pita puchois kvar kasafti lemalo, He says in every one of these negatives there's two levels. V'zehu elikai nitzar lishoni meira hu ra, that's ra. Usfasai midaber mirma is mirma. So Meira and Mirma are two sides of the coin called Ra. It says Lishoni Meira, my tongue, from Ra, and it says Mirma should not enter into my lips. What's the difference between the tongue and the lips? Kokasafti Lamala, namely, what is the difference between the two? Sfasai is minasofa ulechutz. So there are two different levels of talking sheker. The gon on the pasuk chet shachut l'shoinam, right? Chet shachut l'shoinam. Their tongue is like an arrow. So he says, what is the point? He says, when a person wants to shoot forward to a distance, what does he do with the bow? The bowstring. He pulls it back more. He says, there are two kinds of liars. There's a liar who stam tries to mislead you, and then there's a liar who makes the word so the opposite of what he intends that he tries to ensnare you and entrap you. Like the person says, I love you, when he really hates you, but he wants you to falter in some way. He wants to get you to buy a stock that's going to go down the drain, and he'll make the commission. So he says, I love you. That's the person who's pulling the string back. It's the opposite direction. But it's only because it should go forward even more. So that's Chet Shachut L'Shoinim. So L'Shoinim is a much deeper level. And then he writes, L'Kal Lai Nafshi Si Doim Neged Geya. The nafshi ka ofel akol yeh who can neged goin. You notice an interesting thing? Mekalei nafshi sidoim doesn't take the other people into account at all. But the person who does take people into account and expects them what? To cater to his whims and to worship him, for them lehefech lemkalei nafshi sidoim, and what? Ka ofer tihyeh. It should be like the dust of the earth. In other words, It is a relationship. The first one has no relationship. So he says, I'm not going to be lording. I'm not going to be full of gaiva. I'll be full of shiflus. But it's not connected to other people. Just like the geya is not connected, so the opposite, to fix the geya, doesn't have to be connected.
It's the opposite.
He says, nafshi sidaim. Right?
Yeah.
The nafshi ka'ofel akol tiya keneged goin. When the person wants to lord it over people, right? Mizgoyo machmas ga'avosu rotsa shuhu yisora aleyem. So now what does he say? My relationship to the people will not be one of trying to lord it over them, but rather I'm like the dust under their feet and they can trample all over me. Again, it's a relationship to others, but this time in the opposite sense. It's very beautiful. But the fact that he picked this Elokai Nitzar, that this should be a reflection of these psukim, is also very fascinating, that he should notice that.
So how about Gay? Why is he saying that kind of see that he doesn't care about the kind of Nafshi?
What do you mean? The Mekalalei Nafshi Sidaim means that I have no sense of myself. That's what it means, Nafshi Sidaim. By the way, you just reminded me of something. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said an amazing thing that bears repeating in this context of Elokai Nitzar L'shoni Meira. The Gemara says in a number of places, particularly Maseches Gittin, Hanelovim ve'enam olvim, shoimim cherpasam ve'enam mishivim, oisim me'ahava usmeichim b'yisurim, aleyam akosuv oimer ve'oihavov kitzeis Hashemesh b'gvurasa. So the normal understanding is that this is a repetition of the same point three times. Nelovim ve'enam olvim, people humiliate them and they don't humiliate back. Shaimim cherposam, they hear again their cherpa, their busha, the ena meshivim, they don't answer. Oisim me'ava, whatever they do is from avas Hashem, right? Usmeichim b'yisurim, and if somebody hurts them, they're actually even happy, they leave it alone. They think it's three different expressions of the exact same madrega. Says Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, these are three separate madregas entirely. The first madrega is the person is very upset. It affected him. Somebody said something nasty to him and it hurts. And he has an inclination, there's a part of him that would like to punch the other fellow in the nose of responding in kind. And einam olvim. But they do answer. So they'll say, why do you want to hurt me? Why did you do this to me? It's a very high madrega, because the other person's going out with harsh and terrible words, and I'm controlling myself, and I'm only responding with a certain measure of gentleness. But I am responding. Shaimim cherposam ve'enam mishivim means he doesn't respond at all. It's a higher madrega, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, but it hurts him inside. People who really do it only out of love for Hashem, that they become even happy, they rejoice with the calumnies, with the arrows, with the slings of other people against them. So there's a story about one of the great tzedakah collectors of Yerushalayim, who was, we'll stop here, just finish a few words in the Gra in a minute, and then we'll stop. There was one of the great tzedakah collectors in Yerushalayim, and he was responsible for massive amounts of money that, because he was such an ish ne'eman, rich people from all over the world used to make gemachs to lend the money and to give out the monies. And he was the one that was the gizbar. He was managing these gemachs in Yerushalayim. He had a rich person in England. He would send him $10,000, and he says, you know how to give it out, or you know how to disperse the monies or lend the monies. So he came once to his Rebbe and he says, I can't take it anymore. He says, I go to this person and I give him money, Somebody comes from across the street and says, how come you're giving him money? You don't give me money. I need it more than he does. Another person says, I give him money. He says, you're giving me this. He throws it back at me. What's this going to do for me? You're giving me $100. I need $1,000. I need $10,000. And that's how it goes the whole day. He says, I can't take it anymore. So the Rebbe asks him, isn't there anyone that says thank you? Isn't there anyone that says Yashar Koyach? So he says, yeah, of course there's people who also say Yashar Koyach. He says, them you should ignore completely. But when somebody yells at you, put it in your pocket, he says, it's unbelievable zuchus. The nafshi ke'ofa lakol tihye. So the Rebbe Yisrael Salanta says that when the person is trampling on you and you feel the simcha of it, that's the highest madrega of all. You know why? Because it's oisim me'ahava. Everybody does a good deed. He expects the Yashar Koyach. When that Yashar Koyach comes, there's a little bit of a payment for the good deed right there. A person likes to hear a Yashar Koyach. A person likes to be liked. People want to be loved. And if I am in control of massive amounts of money, and I am able to help somebody, and I see the smile on his face, and the pat on the back, and the thank you, or the glint and the tears in the eyes of the person, you saved me, you, now I can make a chasana, there's a real gashmius d'gahanoah that you get from that, that limits the schar. It actually limits the schar to some extent. Because there's already a shtickl payment right here on this world. Because the other person who doesn't have the gizbarus, he doesn't have the opportunity to make the other fellow happy in that way. So these gvirim are giving you a tremendous tool. So when you make somebody happy and he says it's gewaldic, he says you should forget about that, ignore it. But when a person yells at you and screams at you, then what you did is taken away. What you did is, of course, tremendous. He's complaining that he has 100 instead of 1,000. If he wouldn't have the 100, he would be better off. The person that says, why did you give my neighbor more? Does that mean that he's giving him less because he gave the neighbor more? And on and on. So the Teretz is, these people are upset and they're frustrated and they're crying and mamela they're complaining. So what does it mean? They're not giving you the pat on the back. So then what you did, which was of course totally good, is completely l'shem shamayim. When something's completely l'shem shamayim, the schar is absolutely enormous. That's the madrega of oisim me'av u'smeichem v'yisurim. Doesn't mean the fellow's masochistic, that he enjoys suffering. It means when you do for others, right? And you react to others, and all you have in mind, getting back to the concept of kanoi, is the kvod shamayim shabai and the kiyum ha-mitzvah shabai, and you eradicate the ani, that is the highest level and the most schar that a person could get. So the Goyin says over here, over mitzvah secha, psach libi b'sara secha nega taiva shehu hefech ha-toira, you know, if somebody learns this well and chazes over all the different terms that the Goyim uses that we already learned earlier, he'll never say a lekain tzar the same way any again. It's an unbelievable matana over here that each phrase, how it stands. So Bekitzer, all of these elements, which are all the negatives grouped together in their proper context of Kina, Taiva, and Kavod, and the duality of each one, these are six elements, and each one of these elements is reflected in this pasuk. And what I wanted to conclude with is what I started out with, that Yiras Hashem has to include Snois Ra. You have to hate evil. If a person doesn't hate evil, it's not because he's such a nice guy. It's because it doesn't matter enough. And if it doesn't matter enough, it's because he could tolerate evil. And if he can tolerate evil, that's not really Yiras Shamayim. A Yirei Shamayim cannot tolerate evil. And there's something else about it. The presence of evil is not dafka because I created the evil. That's the remarkable thing about the ultimate level of Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim cannot stand the stench of Ra. He cannot stand the environment of Ra. Because wherever Ra is in the world, it spits in the face of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if a person has that hergesh, he's an unbelievable tzaddik. Providing one thing, of course. That there's nothing of him in that equation. 95% of the time, I don't know if you could hold me to a number like that, but I mean the huge majority, the vast majority of times that are looked upon as kanos, is not the kanos of Eliyahu, it's not the kanos of Misanecha Hashem Esna, it's not the kanos of Yiras Hashem Sinas Ra. It's a personal vendetta on some level. There's always something going on, or that the person has indigestion. But whatever it isn't really absolutely l'shem shamayim, and not the only thing that he's focused upon. And that's why Ikanoz has such a bad rep. But the fact is that it is a yesoida yesoidos in the fundamentals of Yirat Shamayim.